And today we are focusing on boys, teenage boys, and their health and lifestyle. Looking here at a lot of headlines around the world. Coming out of Australia, healthy kids, this is a feature. Over the last 25 years, rates of obesity have risen in many countries around the world. Some researchers have called it an international epidemic of childhood obesity, and how that's impacting boys and their, whether it's the junk food, whether it's the lack of exercise, or even body image as well, is something we're seeing more and more on the rise when it comes to teenage boys. Even things like anorexia. Many health things to address in the next hour. Also looking at headlines coming out of the UAE when it comes to teenage smoking. It says here, focusing on younger generations, health authorities can make a preemptive strike against smoking. This is the age that is most dangerous, the teenage years, especially in this region. In the local study, 40% of smokers started when they were teenagers, with 90% hooked by the end of their 20s. So joining me around the table to discuss what they do in the UAE when it comes to health and fitness, and maybe imparting some knowledge of their younger selves. It's a real pleasure to welcome to the show. We've got Robin Giles, Director of Rugby and Head of Strength and Conditioning at Dubai English Speaking College. Hello and welcome to you.
Thank you.
It's good to see you. Alongside Keith O'Malley-Farrell, Managing Partner of the Physical Training Company. Hello, Keith. Welcome back.
Thank you very much. How are you?
Good, good, good to see you. And Spencer Lodge, Founder of Make It Happen, coaching people into success, companies, sales, but on his own mission when it comes to health and fitness. How busy are you? Welcome, Spencer.
Hiya.
Good to see you. Last time we met, you were talking actually with one of Keith's colleagues from the physical training company. You'd cycled the London to Paris bike ride, yeah?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, and that had been quite a journey for you. Tell us a little bit about what took you to that cycle race.
Okay, so it all came off the back of spinal surgery and being told that I couldn't do the exercise that I wanted to do. And luckily I met Chris, who works with Keith, and he persuaded me that we should set a goal. We set a goal, and it was London Paris, and we trained for it and did it.
Fantastic. And you also were telling us then that you had battled with your weight, you'd been overweight, and that was something also through exercise and changing your lifestyle, you'd made some real positive changes.
Yeah, it was definitely a lot to do with being, well, I was injured, I hurt my back, so I had an operation, I couldn't exercise, I was carrying more weight than I needed to, so, you know, there was a chance to try and do something about it, but your limiting self-beliefs always tell you can't do things and you shouldn't do things, and that's why sometimes you do need someone outside of that to help you do that, and this man over here and his team helped that happen.
You've got a long list of things you're going to be doing over the next 12 months. We'll share that, including Everest Base Camp. We'll share some of those missions that you're on when it comes to your own personal journey. Mm-hmm. You were saying there about, you know, people need help sometimes. And Robin, Director of Rugby and Head of Strength and Conditioning at Dubai English Speaking College, working with many young people of the UAE. Tell me a little bit about your work and what you do there.
So we try and provide an environment which is easy to access for all individuals, both girls and boys, where they can access strength and conditioning and sport. And I think people get a bit lost in the term strength and conditioning. They think it's lifting weights. It's not. It's running around, it's enjoying, it's having sport, whether it be involved in teams or otherwise. So I think our goal at DESC is really to provide those environments, and it's not just about physical development, it's about social development, psychological development, emotional development. And I think we're trying to develop a culture where that happens on its own and we stand back and they do it themselves.
Well, it's great to have you here today and to get your insights. And Keith, you know, physical training company, how's that going?
Yeah, it's going well. Everyone's happy. Everyone's moving along. We're just preparing for the summer now. A few people are heading around the world doing sort of different cycle events and different running events. So yeah, we're keep trucking through.
So tell me a bit about your teen years. Were you always healthy? Were you a healthy kid?
I was, yeah, in the sense where I was tall and I was very skinny, and I couldn't put on any sort of weight. Like you could play the probably guitar string off my rib cage growing up. So a lot of my sports were field sports, team sports, playing. In Ireland, we've got a thing called Gaelic football and hurling, which are two sort of pretty unique sport field sports that all of the primary schools play. You have to play. It's tribal. It's like your school plays the local school and everybody plays and all that until you're kind of 12 and 13. And then the good kids keep playing and the weaker kids move off. But then I went into a rugby playing school, so I spent a lot of time playing rugby, and that got pretty serious. I was pretty committed to that then in my later teens. So I was always active, healthy, I suppose, but it wasn't by choice. It was just by default.
Well, that sounds like you were made to do it. So did you enjoy those activities?
Yeah, because it was all team sport.
Right.
I tried my hand at a few individual sports and I didn't like them. Just standing by myself waiting for my turn just wasn't my thing. I was much more of a get involved with the group and all run around chasing a ball and see what you can do.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know about you, Spencer, but when I was at school, you know, it was part of the curriculum that you would do sport, there would be physical activity, it was laid out within the school hours. So, I mean, I was like house captain of the hockey team. It was like part of the school culture alongside your academic lessons as well. Was that the same for you?
Yeah, but if you actually remember, we didn't do sport that much at school. We had, you know, sports lessons two or three times a week, where we would in the winter do the rugby and the football and the summer do the athletics. But I don't think if you compare to how much you do need, there was enough going on. It was the stuff we did outside, the Sunday league football and the Saturday morning rugby and stuff that was done outside of school that helped contribute towards the fitness that we got involved with.
So, Robin, how is it within school today then at desk? Is it within school hours? Is it part of the curriculum that children are expected to do a certain amount of physical activity?
I think it depends on the school, so I can only really talk about desk, and I've previously been at one other school in Dubai. But it's a bit of a mix. It depends on your level of performance. We, for instance, there's a sport on after school every day. So it's pretty easy to access, and it's multiple teams. It's not just one team at the top and then the rest fall away. So there's a lot of access at that level. And then during lessons, we've got our core PE lessons or our timetable PE lessons. And then on top of that, there's another tier. So we remove the best kids from some classes so they can perform extra sport. And then the last part is before school. We have an open club before school, so that starts at 6:45. And any kid in the school, doesn't matter what age, girl or boy, they can turn up and we can put them through some S&C stuff, whether that's in a game or in the gym or otherwise, or just some movements. So I think it does depend a lot on the school that you're going to. I'm very lucky. Our school is very supportive and open to the idea that sport is a huge part of what we do.
And why do you think it's important? Why do you think, particularly for teenage boys, whether it's sport or physical activity is important? Why do you think that?
I think you can get lost in the idea that it's just about physical health. I think it's a lot about mental health as well. I think you develop an adversity. You get used to dealing with adversity, and you can, whether it be with strength training or with team sports or individual sports, but you become used to adversity and you develop resilience. And it's that resilience which you can take from sport and you can put it into every other walk of life. And it's, I think there's a lot of life lessons you learn either through sport, team sports or individual sports or just going to the gym.
Spencer, do you agree?
Yeah, I do, to be honest with you. I think it's a really valuable point that you make. There's a lot of stuff that we can do if we want to, isn't there? And I think that a lot of schools aren't really doing all the things they can do. There's lots of after-school activities, as you've talked about. But if you think about how many kids are actually engaged in them, meaning if you take the number of kids in a school, then that's the thing that always worries me. You know, how many kids are actually being pushed down in that direction?
Right, OK. What do you think, Keith? Why do you think physical activity is important for young men, teenage boys?
But with some guys, you know, sometimes it's kind of a rite of passage. You know, it's a way where you can kind of find yourself amongst all the guys. You kind of, you pit yourself against your peers. There is that the teamwork element of it. A lot of the stuff that we do at the company is based around community and based around like working together and trying to take the struggle out of, or the struggle or the pain out of the whole activity of trying to improve yourself, trying to improve your fitness. So we try and get as many people together to work together. And it's the same when you're growing up. Like if you're in a team sport, or even if you're an individual sports person, you still have a team around you where you bounce ideas off each other, you help each other, you rely on someone, you learn how to interplay, and each person has a separate role with all working towards the same outcome. So I think learning those kind of skills and learning how to compromise and learning how to go one more for someone else is very important then as you move into an adulthood in any sort of project you're trying to endeavour in.
Well, looking at the statistics around the world, there is a rise in childhood obesity. So how's that impacting young people and lifestyle choices as well? We've just mentioned, I earned at the top of the show, about smoking. Looking at some news headlines around teenage boys and their health and lifestyle. One here from coach.9.com coming out of Australia. Some teenage boys drink over 50 litres of soft drink a year. Another one here coming from Pediatrics that says a risky trend, teen boys and muscle building products. So if you've got concerns for your son or somebody you know that you're, you know, observing and maybe thinking they need a bit of help, or you're just worried about their health, whether it be obesity, whether it be some lifestyle choices, or even aggression, if you've got an angry boy, let us know about that. 4001, and your thoughts when it comes to the lifestyle choices for young people and maybe what we could be doing more to support them and help them, guide them. It's a real pleasure to have Robin Giles here, Director of Rugby and Head of Strength and Conditioning at Dubai English Speaking College, alongside Keith O'Malley Farrell, Managing Partner of the Physical Training Company, and Spencer Lodge, Founder of Make It Happen. Many people texting in already when it comes to what we think about young people, particularly boys, and why they need to exercise, why they maybe need to reduce some of those junk foods. It seems as we're looking at these news articles, there's a lot of it going on. We're just checking out here when it comes to recommended advice for teens, children and adolescents, in fact, when it comes to exercise. It's being recommended by the kids' stats here that 60 minutes per day, every day, for children and adolescents. So if you've got one of those at home, are they being physically active 60 minutes a day? And we don't mean walking from the car into school or into, we mean like properly exercising, running, playing sport, maybe doing some weight exercise, but doing some real sort of proper exercise for 60 minutes every day. That's interesting to me. What do you make of that, Keith?
Well, I know when I was growing up, we, from being a very kind of committed, serious rugby player, we were in the gym, or not the gym, we were at gym a couple of days, on the pitch a couple of days, and then a couple of games, and then some recovery sessions. So we were easily 60 minutes. But before that, we used to just go out after school, go home, throw your school bag in the corner, run outside, put your jumpers for goalposts, and just start kicking the ball around. I don't think the kind of that opportunity is here for people. You might be able to know a little bit more.
Were you eating a lot of junk food though? Because you can kind of get away with it. That's what we think. We think you're a teenager, you can have those burgers, you can have those fries because you're burning it off, you're young. How was it for you?
Yeah, I remember from that perspective, like from dinner junk food, yeah, I wasn't really troubled by what I used to eat. But I remember at some point making a conscious effort to not eat things like donuts and pastries and croissants and all that kind of stuff. Like, I used to try and avoid that. I don't know why. I don't know what I was basing that on. Just somewhere in the back of my mind, this is unhealthy, so I'll try and avoid it. But soft drinks was a huge vice for me. And then I never shied away from like a cinema with the sweets and chocolate. But I think because I was so active, maybe I got away with it.
Yeah, I was just on that one, I think science has changed a lot, particularly nutrition, sports science, and what we're doing to our body has changed. And I think when I was growing up, everyone said, all right, certain soft drinks are bad. But now the sort of literature says that actually maybe a glass of orange juice is even worse. So I think we're learning a lot, and it's changing very quickly. And I think certainly I didn't know about all this stuff. I would always choose orange juice over a soft drink, but now I'm being told actually I can't.
Oh, that's actually a whole other discussion and debate, I think. But you know, but then it's confusing, isn't it? I mean, looking at this headline, teenage boys drinking over 50 litres of soft drink a year. As you said, Spencer, actually that doesn't seem a lot if you think about it. You think young people are drinking a lot more than that.
Well, that's 1 litre a week. That's nothing. You think about it, kids are consuming way more soft drinks than that. And I've got a 17-year-old and a 15-year-old, and I'm convinced that they consume more than that. I would probably say maybe 100 or 150 litres a year.
Yeah, so, and concerns about that, you know, what it's doing to the body. We've just got a really terrible story this morning. Just this morning we picked this story up. 16-year-old boy dies after an arrhythmia from caffeine overdose. A 16-year-old boy died from a caffeine overdose after drinking caffeine-laden soft drinks, coffee and an energy drink. This was in South Carolina. It's coming out on the report today Out of America show. On this particular day, within the 2 hours prior to his death, we know he'd consumed a large diet drink, fizzy drink, a cafe latte, also a burger, fast food and some other type of energy drink. It was so much caffeine at the time of his death that it caused his arrhythmia. Last month, researchers reported that energy drinks can cause dangerous changes in heart function and blood pressure above and beyond caffeine alone. Another team found a similar dangers back in 2015. This person's spokesperson says, I'm telling my friends and family, don't drink them. Now, it may be, sadly, that this 16-year-old boy had a weakness in the heart. It could be that. but it does make you set up and think, doesn't it? Robin, you are just new, become a father, and you've got a baby boy, a fresh baby boy, which is wonderful. Congratulations.
Thanks very much.
But you know, you're in the world of fitness and education. What do you think, have you thought about it yet? What would be your concerns for your boy in the growing up and in the future when it comes to his health?
I think the priority for my wife and I is developing, or trying to nurture, a healthy relationship with food and drink. And I think it's very easy to get lost in diets and fads and hobbies and stuff. And what you really want to create is a general understanding and a deep appreciation for food, and this a real positive relationship. I think you can get lost in, right, I'm not going to have fast food at all. And where's the fun in that? And I think sometimes you do need a reward, like once a week, something. And I think it's developing that positive relationship. And I think far too many people can just be too militant with the way they approach food.
Well, lots of you agreeing, lots of people agreeing on that as well. But also interesting to see this response, one from Jamie. Young adults now are far more conscious about their appearance and vanity. This results with excessive muscle gain rather than regular fitness. This has long-term health implications on the body and vital organs, which they wouldn't understand maybe at this stage of their lives. Social media has a massive impact on youth now. Parents have a duty to guide their children on health implications, much like if they were discussing alcohol or similar. What do you think about that?
Yeah, I completely agree with what you're saying there. I think the responsibility must lie with the parents, and it must start at an early age. And I think a lot of the time that doesn't happen, and there's a million excuses, and people don't have enough time, or they'll blame social media, or they'll blame computer games that the kids are playing, or their busy lives. But you know, all of the years I've been alive, there's been 24 hours in the day. How comes all of a sudden the same 24 hours means that we can't do those things because of these stories or excuses as parents that we give ourselves that we then feed onto our kids? So I do really believe it's absolutely the responsibility of the parents.
Robin Giles, Director of Rugby and Head of Strength and Conditioning at Dubai English Speaking College. Interesting to see when you were a young man playing for England Counties under 18 rugby, rowing for Great Britain and the under 16s team, and the list goes on. Helping young people, of course, here through education at Desk. We've also got Keith O'Malley Farrell, Managing Partner of the Physical Training Company. And Keith, of course, bringing a lot of experience to us here in the region, helping people back to full fitness after injury maybe, or inspiring people to keep fit, get fit, and helping them with their lifestyles, diet, nutrition. That's all part of what your team does at the Physical Training Company. You've got a bit of a military background. We're working and helping people in the British military. And we also have with us Spencer Lodge, who brings 23 years of experience in the international financial services. But in 2015, Spencer created Make It Happen, hoping to get entrepreneurs, employers and employees, giving them the tools that they need to succeed. And he's taking part in a lot of events this year. He's about to climb Everest, to trek to base camp, Everest base camp, and then looking to the London to Paris cycle and on to Geneva, the bike ride. That's coming up in July. And then ice climbing course on Mont Blanc later in the year. And then you're going to be doing what I did last year, which is trek to the summit of Kilimanjaro. That's coming up in November. So I wish you all the best with that. So learning a little bit about these guys and what they were like as young men, and also helping us put some context into what we can do to help young people today. Let's share some of the messages. Lots of messages coming in. One here, I've got a 13-year-old son who's a lovely child generally, but my fear is that he's not doing enough sport. He's slightly underweight and has an overwhelming interest in computers, which takes his preference to staying indoors. He's capable at sports, even with one term of tennis lessons. He entered and he won a local tournament. Even with this success, he didn't want to pursue tennis. He does swimming now, but not by choice or willingness. I do feel that his mood is somewhat unstable, with cooperation and family relationships under fire daily. Is there a way that I can encourage him to become more enthusiastic in sports? Spencer. It's
an interesting point, but did you notice that the two sports that were discussed there weren't team sports? And so when you talk about what Keith had said earlier about the fact that he was involved as a young person and involved in team sports, and you had the camaraderie and you had that social element to it as well, I would be thinking about that. You know, what can he get involved in where his buddies are involved as well, where his friends could be engaged, whether that's, you know, football, rugby, whatever it might be as a team sport. That for me would be the first place that I would start if I was in that position right now. And I suppose you've got the carrot or the stick issue as well to deal with. How do you go about motivating somebody to do something? And then also another one, a little bit of a tangent here, but what about getting that boy involved in a charity in some way and seeing how he can make a contribution to that charity? And maybe he can do something physical to raise some funds for that charity. And maybe that would motivate him.
No, really good points. And, you know, that this person's not alone. Lots of people are texting in this afternoon with similar stories. Kids that may have been into sport but not anymore, or into activity. Now they're watching games, or, you know, they're being far more sedentary. And we've already highlighted that it's being recommended that young people should be doing at least an hour's exercise every day. What about at school, Robin? How are you motivating the pupils, the students who maybe have to do it, but actually you can tell the ones that maybe aren't so keen? Or have you seen anywhere that people have changed in their attitude towards sport and activity?
Yeah, I think it's a really tough one, because it's often schools and clubs often cater mainly for the top percentages. But again, if you try and go to it or ask about the good schools, or find out what the good schools are, try and find out about what they're doing in for these kids. I think it comes back to that team sports thing. I think team sports, and some schools have houses, so you have inter-house sports. Where the guys that aren't, or guys or girls aren't in the top tier, and then they can just get involved. And I think that's usually your access. And once you've got your foot in the door, it's very easy that they'll then, you know, it's a habit. You create a habit, and then they want more and more and more. And it was, I think, it's brilliant that some people are getting involved in team sports. There's so many academies and clubs in Dubai, so many. They're all out there. Whether it's team sports, so football, rugby, whatever, or whether it's just strength training in groups, in this group fitness, which is developing. It's a big industry now.
Yeah, but is there always a pressure to be the best at it, to win? Which, I, you know, don't get me wrong, I come from a sporting family, a family of boys, father, all into sport, and that was how I grew up, with that as the only girl. So I believe in competition, healthy competition. I believe in wanting to, you know, perform to your best ability. But I'm also mindful of those kids that feel intimidated by it, and maybe they're falling through the system, possibly.
I think the chances are they're probably not the only ones that feel like that, and I think if they realise that, then there's probably another tier under that. And what you'll find is that the more they get involved in these sports, the more they'll probably find that they're not alone, and there is access for all of them.
Keith, I was looking here, we were touching on it earlier, we're looking here at the NHS recommendations on physical activity for young people 5 to 18 years of age. And yeah, we've got in there, you know, the swimming, gymnastics, you've got sit-ups, you've got football, rugby, tennis, the swimming, it's there, football, basketball. But then it goes on to talk about things like, you know, skipping with a rope, or jogging, or even more than that, playing games like hopscotch, or maybe doing, what did you say earlier, Spencer, a game at school that you did in the playground?
I don't remember. You used to play bulldog.
Oh, but yeah, British bulldog, or yeah, bulldog, or those sorts of things. And yeah, it's, you know, so where you're actually being active without even realizing it.
Yeah, when you're younger, like thinking about trying to improve your health as the forefront to entering into a sport is probably the last thing a kid is going to respond to. They just want to go and have fun, and a byproduct of that is being active and running around and playing with their friends. But from a physiological perspective, if you want your kid to be sort of athletic and give them the broadest opportunity to kind of experience and be proficient at as many movements and sports as possible, then the things when they're younger that will offer them the most movement-based benefits, so gymnastics, where they're running around, jumping up and down, tumbling, they get used to falling, they get used to kind of not worrying too much about getting themselves maybe a little bit hurt, they're using huge variety of muscle groups through movement patterns. That is kind of what people in the industry kind of, well, personally, I'll talk about, I wish I had been in gymnastics as a kid, because it would have given me so much strength and control and coordination and flexibility. So then when I was 7, 8, 9, 10, I'm having fun doing all that. Then when I moved to a teenager, I would have had the flexibility and the mobility, because my body would have developed that way while it was developing. So I would have had all the attributes as my body was growing, instead of maybe just running, where you're moving in one plane of direction, or you're only working a certain muscle group in a certain movement pattern. I was fortunate enough to play Gaelic football, which is similar to Aussie rules, for people who kind of want to frame it a bit, where we used our hands and our feet. So you had to have hand, eye, foot coordination, and you had to be able to run around in many directions. So it gave me quite a good base to then move into rugby, where you just need to use your hands and your shoulders, you need to run in a straight line from my position. So I would say that's the hidden benefit between getting your kids just playing, just running around, jumping left and right, twisting in circles, falling over, jumping back up, is they begin to learn all these motor control and motor patterns that, like swimming, it's going to be great for your kid, but it's going to kind of narrow their focus as they get a little bit older, and then they might find it difficult when they get bored of being in the pool at 6 a.m. to transition into another sport because they're just not good at it and they're used to that success. If I can, one thing I would say to that woman with the trying to get the kids involved is try and find a group of his current friends to all enter into a sport together so that he has peers at the entry point who are all at the same level. They're all a little bit nervous, they're all not good at the sport, and they can and then offer as many different sports or activities or extracurricular movement, whatever you want to call it, so that they can all do it together and he doesn't feel like he's the outsider stepping into a group of competent kids. And that might help his confidence a bit more and get the buy-in if he knows that his friends will be there with him.
Teenagers like to eat a lot. Boys like to eat a lot. They're growing. I think you made a really good point there as well, Keith, about the physical side of things, that their bodies are changing and growing. And so how you're forming muscle, how you're, you know, keeping your bones healthy, which is going to stand you in great stead for later life, as well as, you know, releasing a lot of energy. And if you're feeling, you know, anger or pent up emotions, you've got a lot of hormones raging through the teenage years for boys. So there's a lot to be said for physical activity being really important for young boys, for young men. But the food intake, we've touched on it. Let's look at that a little bit more in detail. The amount that boys are eating, they need to eat, they need, they're growing, they need it. But what would you advise with regards to eating well and getting good sleep? You know, all those things we talk about every week when it comes to adults, but what about the teenage boys? So what would you recommend as a good diet?
Yeah, so When kids go through this sort of peak height velocity, they get this, which is what we understand as a big growth spurt. It's like their final growth spurt. There's a huge release of anabolic hormones, and don't be scared about the word anabolic. I think people do get scared about it and they associate with steroids. But it's things like testosterone, cortisol, insulin, and I think sport helps regulate those. So if you've got an angry kid who's really sort of playing up at home, chances are if you introduce them to sport, it's going to start regulating their levels of testosterone. And cortisol is associated with stress as well. So if you can exercise and start controlling your levels of cortisol, chances are the stress levels are going to come down as well. So I think it's a good way of sort of monitoring, maintaining, and sort of controlling those hormone levels in your child.
I think it's a really good point. I was looking at helpguide.org, help for parents of troubled teens, and it examines all these feelings of anger, frustration, anxiety, stress. We were talking a few weeks ago on the show, on the psychology show, about that. It's across that, you know, you can see the stats for yourself, the increase in anxiety in teenagers, boys and girls, and where that's coming from. So how to combat that through physical exercise. And through diet as well. And I mean diet in the sense of eating well. I don't mean in, you know, eliminating. I mean like getting the right balance. What do you think is a good meal? What's a good hearty meal for a teenager, Spencer?
Well, first things first, that they eat you out of house and home without a shadow of a doubt. And so whatever is in the fridge, whatever is in the cupboard, they're going to grab as soon as they walk in the door. So we've got to be clear on that they're just going to consume, aren't they? So it's down to you as a parent to first of all think about what you put in the cupboards for them to consume, I think. And if you're just going to fill it with chocolate and crisps and stuff, then they're going to eat it. But if you fill it with apples and bananas, I'm sure that they'll just consume those in the same quantities. In terms of a healthy meal for kids, I think that, you know, being British as I am, we talk about the whole meat and two veg thing. But what do kids need to consume? If they're doing a lot of exercise, then they've got to get their carbohydrates in, haven't they? And if they're not doing a lot of exercise, again, as a parent, you've got to be saying to yourself, right, my kid sat there doing this thing which I can't stand, which is staring at their phone on social media or computer games all evening long. If they're going to be doing that, then you've got to think about what they consume, and they've got to eat something more healthy, protein and vegetable based, I would suggest. And that's what my advice would be to any parent that asked me. Not that I'm an expert, apart from the fact that I've got two teenage daughters that do eat us out of house and home.
So I've been responding to headlines, some teenage boys drinking over 50 litres of soft drink a year, a risky trend, teen boys and muscle building products. One here, bad habits, teen boys are more likely to eat junk food than girls, leading to long-term health problems. What I've learned about eating disorders with teenage boys, just to give you some heads up there with my panel today. So Keith, just that one there, when it comes to building muscle and these products that are out there, what have you seen? You know, this is the business you're in, you're a physical training company. What would you advise to a teenager who wants to maybe build a bit of muscle, but to do it in a healthy, responsible way?
From a dietary perspective.
And physical.
From a physical perspective, at a younger age, you just need to get moving. You just need to understand what your body can do, kind of move yourself through as large a group of movements as possible. So the larger exercises, don't just go in and grab a dumbbell and do little mini bicep curls, because you're going to get much more benefit at that younger age from stimulating the huge groups like you're doing your squats and your deadlifts and your jumping. What you want to try and do is make sure that you can keep proper form and work with a weight that's actually appropriate to your strength level and not to what you sort of feel like you should look like you're lifting in the mirror. Because there's a lot of young guys will go into a gym and they'll go for the mid-range dumbbell or whatever it is, and they'll just move it a couple of inches down and up and down and up, and they're not having any sort of effect on the muscle.
And I think also that what that highlights to me a little bit is that we always think about appearance and weight and do we look good and do we look attractive to girls, but boys are thinking that too, and that's not to be underestimated by teachers and parents, how what they might be thinking if they feel that they haven't got muscle, they feel they're underweight, comparing themselves to other guys. You know, you need to be really careful about what boys are going through as well as what girls are going through.
Yeah, I mean, there's that aesthetic pressure on the guys as much as there is on anybody else, because everybody is kind of young and impressionable. But as a young sports person, you're looking at the TV and you're looking at your idol and you're looking at Cristiano Ronaldo, and even though he's only a football player, he's shredded. You're looking at your top rugby player and they're absolute monsters, and you know that I need to be that big and I need to have these muscles in these places. And then you go into the gym and perhaps you've not got the right direction, you're not getting the right advice, and you're just looking around the gym, and the things that people are doing commonly are the things that you'll start to try and mimic. And if you don't have the understanding, it's not your fault, you're trying your best, but you just need that direction.
What do you say about that, Robin? And also coming on to this headline here from the Huffington Post, what I've learned about eating disorders with teenage boys, is that something you're aware of in your role?
Yeah, I think there's too much of an obsession with sports or athletes in getting big. And unfortunately, and I'm a big advocate of his, Eddie Jones, in terms of rugby, isn't helping it when he says he needs bigger players. And actually, you look at some of the best players on the rugby scene and they're actually not that big. But as Keith said, they're performing the movements better than anyone else. But it doesn't matter how big you are. And I think when it comes on to eating disorders, I heard this phrase the other day. It was called bigorexia. It's like the opposite of anorexia. Kids, particularly boys, are looking in the mirror and they think they're small. And they think, oh, I need to get bigger. And actually, they don't. And I think people can get lost in these short-term gains of, I need to get big now. When they look at these professional rugby players and the Cristiano Ronaldos, it's taken a lot of time for them to get into that condition. And I think there's no short fix. There's no cheat. Well, there is a cheat, but it's illegal. And I think people need to be aware of it. And it's an education as well. Need to be educated in that.
Message about smoking. I don't know if any of you are or were smokers, but your thoughts on that, Spencer, smoking with kids, teenagers.
Where does it start? You know, where does a teenager start getting, you know, offered or introduced to that kind of stuff? You see some parents that do it at home and in the house and in the car and stuff, and then you wonder about that. Does it come from there, or does it come from an influence from somebody else at school or one of their friends? But how, you know, the teenage kids kind of, they want to explore everything, don't they? They want to try everything. They want to engage whatever their peers are doing. They want to try and get involved in some way, even if it's to disregard it. But we all know what the problems are with smoking. It's, you know, we don't need to talk about that for hours today. But how do you stop it? That's the most important thing, is to work out how you stop it. And I don't think there's an answer to stopping a child trying something they haven't tried before because their friends are doing it.
Yeah, and that peer pressure. But I think also for parents to not... Listen, we don't want people to be completely paranoid about what their kids are doing, but at the same time, they might be doing it. You know, not to think that because we're in this bubble and we live this lovely lifestyle in the UAE, somehow we're immune, our kids are immune to the trappings of certain lifestyle choices. It's all available to them, actually, potentially, and we maybe don't realise that. So
I would say even more so smoking here, because more people smoke here than in the UK, from where I'm from anyway, but the rules are different here. They don't hang around on street corners, kids here, but they hang around in shopping malls. So there's the same kind of the issue going on. I don't think it's so different. Yeah, okay, aesthetically it's different, but I think really kids are exposed to the same problems, the same issues all over the world, based upon being with other kids that are all inquisitive in their nature,
and influenced by media and the internet and what they're watching in movies. So there's popular culture, you know, how they're forming their decisions through those influences. We're running out of time. If there was one message you'd want to impart, or maybe even if you were to look back at your 15-year-old former self, what advice would you give yourself? I don't know. What would you want to end this hour on, Keith? What message would you want to share?
I think you just have to do what you enjoy. I think you have to try and keep looking for that thing that you really sort of, you really flourish at, and whether it's winning or whether it's just being around people or whether it's kind of focusing on something you couldn't do in the past and now you can do, it's just about enjoyment. It's about getting out of bed and being happy with what you're doing and being proud of what you've just achieved.
Robin?
I think building on what Keith said, I think for me it's the don't look back in 2 years and say what if. And that's, if you say what if, and what if I did that, then you've made a mistake. And just keep reanalyzing that and see if you could have done better.
And Spencer?
I think then my message would be to parents to hold yourself accountable and stop, you know, apportioning blame to other people or to the kids even for the reasons they are where they are. Take responsibility. It's you that have nurtured them in this world. It's you that have brought them up. And at the end of the day, they're going to react to the way that you behave towards them. So your parents, you know, please, 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 if you want your kids to do better, then make the effort and stop, you know, allowing them to sit on the computer games and spending time in front of the TV when they
do things together. Get active together. Eat well together. Be active together. Have fun together. Keep moving and keep thinking about what you're putting inside your bodies and your children's bodies. And enjoy, really enjoy. It's the joy of life, and great years to be alive, actually. Those teenage, there's a lot going on, I know, hormonally, but actually fantastic years too. So you want to nurture that in your kids. So many messages. I'm sorry, we are out of time today. We will have to come back and revisit this topic. We could have done 2 hours easily, but for now, a big thank you to Robin Giles, Director of Rugby and Head of Strength and Conditioning at Dubai English Speaking College. Thank you. And thank you to Keith O'Malley Farrell, Managing Partner of the Physical Training Company, and Spencer Lodge, founder of Make It Happen. All of their details and what they're up to and their organisations are on our website today, on our blog post. Connect with us there at DubaiEye1038.com.